Listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Wednesday, January 21st, 2026. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Gonna cheese, hawa, tuxknusum, salama. Thank you for joining the conversation. You can also join us via our live stream, see a behind-the-scenes look in the studio on KTOO's YouTube and Facebook pages. Today, starting Friday and continuing through this weekend, it's the 11th annual Platypus Con, an annual board game convention brought to you by the team at Platypus Gaming. We chat with Joshua Warren about the upcoming con, the schedule, the games, and what you can expect to find for everyone from beginners to seasoned veterans of gaming. We have the second in a series of interviews from KTOO morning host Mike Lane, interviewing the Juno delegation of the legislature as the session begins this week. Today, Mike speaks with Representative Sarah Hannon. And speaking of government, today we're beginning a new monthly series, The Borough Breakdown. Today, we take a look at the upcoming budget process for the city and how it will be affected by last year's municipal election, which is projected to reduce city revenue by $10 to $12 million. A new website has been launched and a survey is available for you to have a choice and a voice in what happens. Those conversations are coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon. First, though, over the last year or so, we were visited here on Juno Afternoon by the Forest Service and discussed the Tongass Forest Revision Plan, among many other things. But during that same period of visits, much change has visited the Forest Service. Alaska lost about a third of its U.S. Forest Service employees due to federal staffing cuts led by the now-defunct Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE. Before that, the agency had around 700 Alaska-based staff. This month, the agency told KTOO that 467 remain. Leading this workforce in flux is Jerry Engersoll, the U.S. Forest Service Acting Regional Forester for Alaska, covering both the Chugach and the Tongass National Forests. He took on this role in 2025 in November. And so an update here in this interview from KTOO's Alex Solomon, Engersoll talks about the changes he's leading Alaska Forest Service staff through, including the impending consolidation of the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the Tongass Forest Plan revision.
What is your vision for this role?
This is a period of change, and it is my job, I think, to keep the boat upright and the passengers in. There's changes in national policy associated with changes in political leadership. And it's my job as a professional civil servant not only to implement those changes, but also to take care of the people and the communities involved.
Over the summer, USDA Secretary Rollins announced the consolidation and restructuring of the USDA, and the USDA made statements to the press that several Alaska Forest offices will close. What is the timeline for that reorganization? Do you know what's going to happen?
I don't. And that's probably the largest piece of that answer, is that I don't know. The announcement of the Secretary's decision and of moving forward with the reorganization has not yet come. And I'll hear about it when the rest of you do. And I'm in an acting regional forester position because that's part of this interim organization. I'm filling in until this larger reorganization takes place. Many employees left the agency over the last year, more in Alaska, even as a percentage of our organization, than in some other parts of the country. And so we've got people stepping up, covering for their departed colleagues.
Let's talk about the Tongass Forest Plan revision, which has been underway for a while now. Can you just go ahead and share where we're at now with the revision and what the next steps are?
We expect within the next few months, maybe less than that, to publish a notice of intent to begin revision of the Tongass Land Management Plan. As you say, that's been anticipated for a while. So I would anticipate after the notice of intent gets published that we will host public meetings and engagement sessions around the Tongass, around Southeast Alaska this spring. I'd expect that we will engage federally recognized tribal governments in government-to-government consultation. We've already begun that process, but we'll do so even more as we officially launch the revision. And then we are hoping to complete the process and revise the forest plan over the next couple of years.
Some federal comment periods have been expedited. Do you expect a shorter public comment period than has happened in the past for this revision?
You know, I think it's too early to know for sure. We want to fully engage people in the development of their plan for their forest. And we don't want to spend all of our lives on planning and not on doing.
That was Jerry Ingersoll talking with KTOO's Alex Solomon. Ingersoll has worked for the Forest Service for 40 years, and he's now the acting regional forester for Alaska. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO.
Hanson Gress, ka eat with the shu yi, we kashuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin talk anakaya ha anikak, gunish cheesh.
You are listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. You can also join us on our live stream on KTOO's YouTube and Facebook pages. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. It's estimated that about 1.2 billion people play a board game annually, and nearly three-quarters of U.S. adults play at least monthly. And that there are over 100,000 active board game titles globally. It's a huge market, and it's one of the most engaging communal activities around. Families and friends battle against each other or work together. Strangers become friends, and friends become lifelong journey companions in the board game of life. And have you ever wanted to dabble but didn't know how? Well, this weekend is the 11th annual board game convention Platypus Con happening here in Juneau, taking place at Centennial Hall from Friday, January 23rd through Sunday, January 25th, with activities for all level of gamers and enthusiasts. And here to share more about this from Platypus Gaming is Joshua Warren. Thank you so much, Joshua, for coming in. Wasati, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing terrific. Looking forward to this weekend.
This is so great. You've been coming in for the last several years talking about Platypus Con. How did Platypus Gaming, I guess. Let's start with Platypus Gaming. How did you start Platypus Gaming?
Me and my wife went to Gen Con, which is a much, much larger board game convention, and it's expensive to go. And so we were like, we can make a similar playing experience here and meet new people and teach some games.
So did you create Platypus Gaming specifically for the reason of having Platypus Con?
Indeed.
Okay. I know you also do a bunch of other things. You work with the library to do like a monthly game night throughout the year, and you'd probably do some other things around gaming throughout the year, yeah?
Yeah, we do monthly at the library, generally on the last Sunday, and now recently for like a year or so, we've been doing Monday nights at Devil's Club.
Oh, Monday nights at Devil's Club. Is that once a month or every Monday?
Every Monday.
Every Monday night at Devil's Club, you can get your gaming on.
Unless we get more snow again.
Yeah, I'm sure there was a couple weeks where you weren't down there. Yeah, I know it's melting. Thank goodness. That's a good, just total sidetrack. Is there a board game that has to do with isolation and being trapped by snow?
There's a couple versions of the thing, which is pretty similar.
Yeah.
We just got one called like Frozen Horror, and I think it's pretty thingish. You're trapped inside an ice place having to trust your friends, but one isn't a friend.
Of course. One isn't always a friend, right? That's how it works. That's so fun. So tell me a little bit about, this is the 11th annual Platypus Con. Tell me, like, give me a sense of like what happens during Platypus Con. What can people expect if they've never gone before?
So once you like come in, we start at 6 p.m. on Friday. There's one of the rooms inside the hall has about 2,600 games, and you, with your badge, you can just come and check one out. And the main ballroom at Centennial Hall is just full of tables to play games at. We do have, for people who are more inexperienced or just want help learning a game, we do have about 8 tables in the main hall where you can just, we'll teach you a game, but you're more than happy to just check out one of those 2,600 and give it a try.
I see. So you can come with a group or you could come solo, yeah?
Yeah, we have some bigger signs we got last year that say, like, players needed that you can borrow so you can grab a game you really want to play and try to find some people to play with.
Okay, so that's so fascinating. And it goes from – the hours are pretty nuts. Like, you go till 2 a.m. every night, basically, right, on Friday and Saturday.
Yeah, and we end at 6 p.m. on Sunday.
And 6 p.m. on Sunday because I guess people got to work or something.
Yeah, and sleep.
But you go from 6 p.m. to 2 a.m. on this Friday at Centennial Hall, 10 a.m. to 2 a.m. on Saturday, and then 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Sunday. And you have some passes for it, right? How much is a pass?
So for adults for the full weekend, it's 40. Kids are cheaper, and we do have some day badges as well. I will say last year on Saturday, we couldn't sell anymore because we'd filled the hall. So if you want to make sure to come, you need to get the badges ahead of time.
And do you do that on your website?
Yeah, platypusgaming.org has the
platypusgaming.org has all the different. And I think there's like a family pass and stuff.
So family pass is 2 adults, 2 kids. Kids are 12 and under. We're also doing a swap meet, so you can like sell some of your old games if you have some to get rid of on Sunday. And we have that's another thing you need to get ahead of time. And there's limited number of them, so if that interests you, act fast.
For the swap meet. Oh, interesting. Okay, because I think that's pretty cool. Because I had a game, I can't remember what it's called right now, but it's one of those. It's photos, and you're trying to solve a mystery together.
Totally.
And you get like 3 cases in the 3 cases to do, like cases that are somebody murdered somebody. And once you do them, that's it. You're done with the game. And then you can pass it on to somebody else or take it to the swap meet, I guess.
Yeah, there's a whole series of games that I definitely, if you show up, should give a try called Unlock. And it's about like an hour long sort of escape roomy kind of thing. But yeah, once you've done it, you've done it.
Yeah.
So those would be the kind of things that people could be like pass on and get some of your money back maybe.
What's one of the most popular games that I think that people play during Platypus Con?
Azul is always really popular. It's a more recent game. Catan is a perennial favorite. We have a tournament for Catan on Saturday, and there are people who come from out of town, out of state to play in that tournament. So
really?
It's a pretty popular one.
Are there prizes for the Catan tournament, or is it just people come for it?
There is a cash prize, but I don't think that's generally why people are coming for it. It is also a qualifier to get into the Nationals for Catan. So if you win here, you have like a guaranteed seat at the Nationals in the summer.
I see. And is the Nationals, is that the Gen Con you were talking about?
Yeah. Okay. Gen Con, I think that's where they do it now, is Gen Con.
I see. So if somebody, I said in the intro that like, 1.2 billion people play games around the globe at least once a year, I guess. And in the States, it's about 3/4 of adults play a game monthly, which is just, that's massive numbers, to think about. But you think about it with your family and I guess what qualifies as a board game, Monopoly is one of the standards you learn when you're a kid, right? But that's just amazing. How many gaming enthusiasts do we have here in Juneau, do you think?
I mean, judging by how many people decide to come to Platypus, I'd say hundreds.
Yeah.
And they all definitely, our first few years, there just seemed to be like a whole bunch of like different little gaming groups. And I hope and I think that we've like added people to those game groups who like they got introduced at Platypus Con and some I would hope some game groups started as well. Like, I feel like one of the things we've done well is help people meet new people to play games with.
Yeah, I think that's the greatest thing, is because it is such a communal thing. I know you can play certain games solo, like they make options for that, but I think the fun is in getting together with a group of friends and, you know, having some food and some beverages and, you know, playing some games and having some laughs and doing all that. Do you consider, like, tabletop role-playing games, would those be considered board games as well?
I think they would probably classify themselves as something different, but it's definitely a similar experience. I do both, and we'll have both at the con. Like, we do have some RPG tables, if that's more your speed.
I see. Okay. Because I'm just wondering, like, does a board game have to have a board?
No. I think there's some that are pretty, activity-esque. They're still board games.
I see. Yeah, that's really kind of cool. So let's go over just a little bit. I think I have the flyer here for those who might be on the stream. This doesn't necessarily have the whole schedule. It talks about the library that you have, the tournaments. You mentioned the one tournament of Catan. Are there other tournaments?
We have around a dozen, more than a dozen this time. So
a dozen tournaments.
Yeah, like Catan. We have some new ones like Up and Down and some classics like Shobu. Those might be new games to you, but most of them are pretty easy to learn, and we're happy to teach you before the tournament.
Before the tournament. And do they all have some sort of prize involved?
They all have at least a trophy and a copy of the game.
Wow.
And there are other ones that are also regional qualifiers.
Oh, interesting. Okay. And those are regional qualifiers, again, to go to the national convention?
They're at a different convention, but okay. Yes, a national-level convention.
I see. Okay. Do you still go to, like, Gen Con and stuff?
I have not been in a while. This time, we're too busy. We're going to go see an actual platypus in a few weeks. So.
Nice. Yeah, I think I've asked you in previous years, where did the name Platypus Gaming come from? Would you mind saying it again?
It's just my favorite animal, and I wanted the name of it to be unique. I didn't want to be JunoCon.
Right, Juno Gaming Con or something like that. Thank you for not putting Juno in the title, right? That's kind of fun.
And it makes a fun mascot. So.
Yeah, I love that. That's true. And you have demos. You're going to be having demos of all kinds of games. You can take home some new games, Play to Win, which is, I guess, you're trying out select games from the library, and you give everyone who played it a chance to win.
So there's 100 titles this year, and if you play it, you can scan the code on the front of the box and fill out a little electronic form, and you're entered to win and take it home, and we give them away at the end, and you don't have to be present. We'll find you later if you're not there. But we definitely encourage people to fill them out. There's some families that's all they do all weekend, and they walk home with like 5 games. So
wow. And this is your collection. Is this you culling your collection down this way, or is this making room for new games, or is it just you want to give people an opportunity to get some games to play at home?
So we are culling quite a few games, but those are not the Play to Wins. Like,
okay.
we make room for new games because we've reached the limit of what the space can hold. And so if you're looking to get some of our great but older games, we'll have them for sale at the con. But the Play to Wins are both support directly from publishers, but also the games that I really like, and I made demo games, we make it so all the demo games are Play to Win. So if you go sit down at our demo tables, you're pretty much automatically entered after you fill in the form.
So if I am wanting to play at Platypus Con this weekend, January 23rd to the 25th at Centennial Hall, you're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm talking with Joshua Warren about Platypus Con. And I have never gone to a convention. What's the first thing I should do when I show up?
First, go into the library and be in awe at the number of games, because most people do not realize there's that many games, and we have a very small sliver of the games in the world. I would probably find, like, either go to the demo area or find a staff person, and we'll help you find people to play with.
Yeah, because it can be a little daunting, right? Because I feel like sometimes there's certain games that are, you know, the rules are a little more complicated. Right, and to get into them can be a little bit more complicated. But then if you find a game that's a little bit easier to learn, maybe one of those games that's easy to learn, hard to master kind of thing.
Yes.
There's a lot of those. But perhaps you want to get your kid involved, you know, give your kid some activity to do with some friends or something. This is a great place to do that. Yeah, it's just a welcoming environment to come in and just be like, wow, I don't even know anything about the first thing about gaming. Show me something.
Yeah, like we definitely, like, as I mentioned, like it's our goal to help people find people to play games with and also play some games. So if you need help, you can definitely reach out to us. And on the kids part, we have like a devoted kids section in the main hall where we have a whole bunch of games that are things that they can definitely handle. And this year we brought back our Puggle tournaments, which is the name for baby platypus. So there's some tournaments that only the kids can participate in, and they were pretty popular last year.
I remember the Puggle tournaments. You're talking about those. What are those involved? Are there certain – which games do they play?
They play Suro, Ice Cool, Ink and Gold, and Skull. So they're all very simple games that kids can definitely like get playing in 30 seconds.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. So Joshua, where did your love of gaming come from? Was it when you were a kid?
Yeah, I definitely played like Monopoly as a kid, and then I grew into Rail Baron and then Acquire. And I'm not sure why we didn't just start at Acquire, because it's a much better game to me personally than those other two. But I've always liked them. And then when I was an adult, it took me a while to find some people to play with. But once I found people to play with, it grew into PlatypusCon. So.
I see. So when you have a journey like figuring out which games, I mean, how did you get so devoted to it that you have 2,600 games?
I always probably bought more games than I needed, but then starting PlatypusCon removed the barrier. I could be like, well, I need to get this for PlatypusCon. So near the end of the year, a lot of online places and YouTube channels will have like what their best games of the year are, and yeah. I eagle eye that and try to have the newest, coolest stuff, and normally it's very new and cool.
I see. That's really awesome. And so how many games do you think you've played over your lifetime?
Well, we have over 2,600, and I think I only have like 400 of those I haven't played. So,
So you feel
I'm
like
over 2,000, maybe over 3.
And of those, is it possible for you to give me like a top 3?
So Hanabi's always high up there. I taught it during jury duty, and it's a fun little cooperative card game. So you're working together. A more recent one is Galactic Cruise, which is a very heavy, crunchy game where you're doing a space cruise. And then probably the last one, which has been really popular at Devil's Club, is a game called Flip 7. And it's really just a stupid, simple push-your-luck game where you're trying to get different numbers, but there's more, like there's 12 12s in the deck. And so if you have a 12, you're really risking it to hit for another card, but you're trying to get to 200 first. And so it's been really popular because it's really easy and quick to play.
I love that. That's so cool. PlatypusCon is happening this weekend, January 23rd through the 25th. It starts at 6 p.m. on Friday. This is all at Centennial Hall over the weekend. You can play until 2 a.m. on Friday and Saturday. And Sunday it goes from 10 to 6 on Sunday. And there's also a swap meet on Sunday. There's tournaments for your kids. There's a couple thousand games that you can try. There's demo tables. There's all kinds of stuff going on. It's a wonderful, friendly environment to learn how to play games. Or I guess if you're a seasoned vet, too, you can just go in and wallop some people.
Yeah, definitely. Like, that's why I try to get the new and exciting things for the few people who have also played 2,000 games for them to find something new themselves.
Yeah, for sure. And that's fantastic. And, of course, you can find everything at platypusgaming.org, which is where you can get tickets and further information. And do you guys have, like, a Facebook page and all that?
We do have a Facebook page and an Instagram, and we're pretty responsive to email, especially this close to the con. So if you have any questions, you can also email us. And our email is platypusboardgaming@gmail.com. But there's also a contact form on the website.
Excellent. Awesome. Joshua Warren from Platypus Gaming, thank you so much, Gwyneth Cheese, for coming in and telling us all about it.
It's going to be great.
I appreciate you. That's great. Okay, up next, with the second session of the 34th Alaska Legislature just kicking off, KTOO is checking in with members of Juno's delegations to talk priorities and plans for the session. KTOO's Mike Lane sat down with Representative Sarah Hannon last week before things got going.
We have Representative Sarah Hannon in the studio with us. Welcome, Representative.
Thank you, Mike. It's good to be with you here at the K2 studios.
Good to have you here. Hey, how are you feeling about going into the second regular session of the 34th Alaska Legislature?
Yeah, well, you know, I came out of an education background, so I always like to say the start of session feels like returning to school and, you know, seeing friends you haven't seen for a while. You know, it's always a good pace. Of course, as a Juno representative, this is my year-round office. I'm in the Capitol building 12 months a year, but it gets kind of quiet in the fall. You know, in the summer we have all those summer visitors, but the pace has picked up. So the building's alive with new people, bright eyes, all the college interns who are, you know, here to change the world in 120 days. And that's always really good energy.
Is there anything that you are particularly looking forward to for this session? And is there anything that you're not looking forward to for this session?
Well, you know, we have got to address our big fiscal issues in this state. And we have got to figure out a path to pay for the things we need. And things haven't gotten cheaper. And our disasters have continued to grow in cost and scope, and keeping the lights on will be a struggle. But we have got to keep the state functional and the roads plowed and the ferries running and schools operational and public safety people eligible to respond and get people working in Alaska, keep people working in Alaska. So there are a lot of tough political discussions to have, and it's the second half of a two-year session, so it makes it a challenge to get complex policy addressed. And then it's a big political election year. You know, as a member of the House, every 2 years is an election year. But this is one of those where it's gubernatorial and, you know, a high-profile U.S. Senate seat, as well as every member of the House of Representatives.
When it comes to the budget, where do you believe cuts are necessary?
I don't see a lot of areas for cuts. We have squeezed and cut the budget for over a decade. And so when we start talking about cuts, we are talking about basic services not being able to be delivered that people have an expectation of. You know, we can't put more equipment on the road to keep our roads plowed without paying workers to drive them. And we compete with private sector, operators and engineers. They can go to the private sector and make more money. And in a variety of places, we can't keep up with the services we need. So I don't see a lot of places to cut.
What does a successful session look like for you?
Well, we come to personal legislation. You always want to see improvements on that. If I could get House Bill 242 passed, that would be good. But I see this as a bill with very little policy dispute because it's very narrow in scope. We're modernizing the sexual assault consent in this from knowing to unknowing being irrelevant. And I think that in the 21st century, we understand the dynamics about how people respond in sexual assault cases and make it prosecutable, because it's just pretty horrific that medical providers could assault someone and not be prosecuted. I have a couple pieces of personal legislation that I think we can get passed. Tax on vape tobacco. That's a bill I've been sponsoring since I first got in, but the Senate version of it is sponsored by Senate President Gary Stevens. That's Senate Bill 24. It's all the way over in House Finance. I believe that we are positioned to get that, because right now, vaped nicotine in Alaska is not taxed by the state. Our tax statutes on tobacco specify type, so cigars, cigarettes, chew, snuff, etc. And the last time we amended that statute, vaping wasn't a thing, so it's not listed. Then there's a little bill of just sort of local interest on charitable gaming, a snow classic that we've gotten out of the House and is in the Senate. We have charitable gaming in Alaska, classics being, you know, the Nanaimo Ice Classic is the one that people most know about. A fiscal plan would be helpful. That would be a real success. But that's pretty optimistic for 120 days.
Representative Sarah Hannon, thank you for joining us in the studio today.
Mike, thank you for having me.
That was KTOO's Mike Lane talking to Juneau Representative Sarah Hannon last week, just ahead of the start of the legislative session. We'll have other interviews with Andy Story coming up later this week. This is Juneau Afternoon on KTOO. Support for Juneau Afternoon comes from Alaska Airlines Club 49. Membership information available at club49hub.com. Support for Juneau Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juneau with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juneau. More at heritagecoffee.com. This is Juneau Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. With the results of last year's municipal election in October, the city and borough of Juneau is expected to have available revenue reduced by $10 to $12 million. This is going to have an impact. In what ways? Well, today we begin a new series I'm calling The Borough Breakdown, which Phil loves, where we'll take a look at different aspects of city government and look at the what, the why, and most importantly, how you can have a voice. Yesterday, the city launched a new website component about the upcoming city government budgeting process. It includes an FAQ page, some resources to understand how the funding works, and a survey that is asking for your input and guidance. Today, I am joined by Assemblymember Christine Wall and from the CBJ Communications Department, Phil Hibshin. Gunath Chish, Haye Adi, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you both here. Wasi Ati, Christine, how are you today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having us.
Of course. And Phil, welcome back.
Yes, thank you for having me, as always.
Thank you for being here. So let's first, I guess, set the scene, right? For those who may not know, which I think most people do, but there was an election in October, mm-hmm. and there were three ballot measures on that election. Can you tell us about those and the results of that?
Yeah, so we had three measures, all of them related to the budget. So the first was, do we want to cap the property tax rate? So the amount that if you own a home, you get charged by the city every year. The assembly has control over what that rate is, but the voters basically voted to cap the level at which the assembly can set that rate. So that one passed.
Okay.
Second one was about food and utilities. So before the election, when you went to the grocery store and bought food, you would pay 5% sales tax on food. Same thing with your utilities. As a result of the election, you no longer pay to the city that 5% sales tax on food and utilities. So if you go and buy anything else, you still pay sales tax to the city, but now you no longer do. The third initiative was to actually change our sales tax structure so that in the summer, residents would pay more, or not residents, people would pay
everyone.
And in the winter, one would pay less. And so the theory behind that was, we've got a lot of visitors who come to Juneau. We can basically offset some of the revenue that we would lose from no longer charging you for food,
right?
By bringing in more sales tax from our visitors. However, that failed, and so the result of one passing, two passing, and three failing was a significant reduction in how much tax the city collects to fund its services.
And this is a distinction that I was learning about, mm-hmm. that I didn't know about during the election, but there's different kinds of funds,
yes.
that the city governing process has. You break this down pretty well on this website, and we should let people know what this website is in case they want to follow along. It's juneau.org/community-compass. It's a new website. It just launched yesterday, and that is where you can go, and there's an FAQ page, and there's some charts and things that will help you understand the mm-hmm. timing of the budget process, where the funds go in certain places, and then a survey that you can take where you can have a voice, as well as some dates for some upcoming workshops. We'll outline
yes.
that a little bit more, but I just wanted to give people a sense of that. But these... these funds, these taxes, go into what's called the general fund, right?
Yes.
And yeah. that is a thing that pays for what, Christine?
I mean, our general fund is really our most flexible funding. And when you think about the things that we typically do as a city, a lot of that comes from the general fund. So police, fire, parks and rec, education.
One most importantly that happened recently, snow removal.
Yeah.
Snow removal.
And state and street maintenance.
There's just like in working through this process and this project that we're talking about, I learned a lot too about everything that's funded through the general fund. And you mentioned on the website, there's a tab that says additional materials, I think. Mm-hmm. And there's a link in there that takes you to some slides from the 2025 Assembly Retreat that have a full breakdown of every department and every service that's funded through the general fund and in what amount. So it's a very helpful resource on the website.
Yeah, and on the stream, I'm showing that page now, but you can find this graph. It's a pie chart, really easy to understand. And it shows you all of the different areas that are funded. Obviously, I didn't realize this, but the big piece of the pie is the school district, right? $37 million, I guess. 30% of the general fund goes there. 15% of the general fund goes to the police department. 8% goes to the fire department. And engagement in public works is 11%. So there's a lot of numbers there that you can, you know, wrap your mind around. It's hard to talk about numbers on the radio, but because it just gets confusing. But you can look at this pie chart and sort of get a sense of like, okay, this is where these cuts are going to need to be coming from. And I don't want to get into the weeds of the other funds, but I just learned that there are some. You list them out, but there's the Enterprise Fund, Special Revenue Fund, Internal Service Fund, Capital Improvement Funds. These cuts won't be coming from those funds. Is that right, Christine?
Yeah, so I think about, let's say, docks and harbors. So we have docks and harbors in our community.
Yeah.
Downtown and a few other places. If those are what we call enterprise funds, because if you're a user of that facility, if you show up and use the facility, you pay for that. The larger public doesn't necessarily pay for that if they're not using it. And so those funds are kept separately because they're funded directly by the people or the businesses using them.
I see. So like an example, just in that, in the enterprise fund, these funds are present in operations like the airport, Bartlett Regional Hospital, like you mentioned, docks and harbors. And they have to, it says here that these organizations must set rates and fees to cover the cost of doing business and address capital needs, right? So they're kind of like running their own business even though they're kind of managed by the city, right?
Yep.
So that's just an interesting thing to think about when you're giving your feedback about where the cuts are in the survey. You get a chance to say, you know, your own piece, really. There are certain things that aren't going to be available to be on the chopping block, as we might want to say, right? So it's just interesting to think about that and try to, it's a really good time, I feel like, to educate yourself as a community member in this process, because you are asking for feedback. So let's talk a little bit about this website, Phil. This communications department is new.
Yes.
It started last fall, I believe, or late last summer, or something like that.
I think during the summer, before I got there.
Yeah, before you got there. But it's new in the last year or so, less than a year. And part of it is to educate the public, right? And to have a little bit more transparency about everything that's going on.
Yeah.
And you are a function of the city manager's office, right?
Yes. Yeah,
okay.
We
so
are.
You're under the city
manager. We're under the city manager's department.
Okay.
Yeah.
So with this website, the Community Compass, what was the goal with creating this website?
So I think you actually summarized it pretty well. A big component of this is public education, because budgets and finances, not everyone is super well equipped to think about those, especially.
We don't even want to think about it in our own life.
Yeah. Like, especially on a municipal level, like, it gets really big and really complicated really fast. So there's a lot of nuances that we're trying to kind of mold the language around in a way that is accessible for a lot of people. So when you visit this website and hopefully take the survey, which we worked really hard on, You'll see that the questions the survey asks aren't necessarily like, how much money do you want to give to CCFR or the school district? It's not asking you for those distinct, specific kind of financial details. It's asking what services that the city provides are most important to you, Boston? Like, what do you value the most? So we're trying to reposition all of this really complex data and information as really simple values information that people can understand how it affects their own life and how they interact with it on a day-to-day basis. So in collecting and delivering that information to the assembly later this year through the budget process, we're hoping that they'll have a compass, so to speak, of what kind of areas in terms of city services the broad public of Juneau kind of values the most and where they're willing to make trade-offs and all that kind of difficult information, because even that gets pretty complicated when it starts hitting close to home.
Well, I like you broke down, we were talking about these different funds, the general fund versus the other funds, and there's a little description on the website. Think of the general fund as like your personal checkbook or your personal account, and then you've got your other funds for like your house improvement or for your, you know, your vacation fund or something like that, where there's money that's for different purposes, but the general fund is for everything else you do, right? That you do, your car maintenance, your food, your, you know, all that kind of stuff, your rent, things like that. So that's an interesting thing to think about. And so, Christine, when you all get, I guess the question is, what are you hoping to learn from this survey? Because it does feel like it's more simplified. It doesn't get into the weeds per se. It does ask, like, what services do you find most valuable or do you think are most valuable? I took the survey. It was really hard.
It's difficult,
because there's like 20 things and you're like, pick four or five, and you're like, yeah, but what do I cut? Okay, where do I cut? What do I cut? So what are you hoping to learn as an assembly member, Christine, from this survey?
I think you really hit the nail on the head there. We want people to be a little bit in our shoes in terms of having to make hard decisions about priorities. You know, when you look at the list, I imagine you probably like all of those things that were on the list. You think the city should, you know, should have parks and should have pools and should fund education. But at the end of the day, if you don't have enough resources to do all those things, we want to hear what our community members, how they balance those things.
Okay.
We set the budget every year. We have a fiscal year that starts in July, so we usually start around December, start talking about how we're going to go through the process. And we spend April and May meeting weekly, going through the details of the budget. And I will say, normally, we have a public hearing after we've done a bunch of work on the budget, and we ask the community, what do you think? And no one shows up. And I know why that is. It's not because it's not super important. Of course, the city's budget's really important, but it's complex. And so that's why we're starting much earlier this year. We really need that feedback. If we're going to be making big decisions about cutting services, we can't do that without knowing how the community is going to balance those priorities.
And Phil, Christine mentioned this feedback session that usually happens. There's going to be a couple more. Do you want to talk about those public feedback sessions and when they are?
Yeah. So we want to make those feedback sessions very accessible, obviously. And the first way to do that is to offer more than one, which we're excited to do. So we're going to be implementing a couple assembly listening sessions, I believe, after the city manager hands you her budget. But those have yet to be scheduled because we're still kind of working out the details on timing. It will probably be, after February would be my guess, right? Yeah, Christine is nodding. I got my dates right. But that'll be all updated on the website as we get more details in, and we'll send out PSAs and stuff so people can be apprised of those dates. But before that, we also have workshops.
Yes. Okay.
So we have the survey, the workshops, and the listening sessions.
What are the workshops?
The workshops are kind of the survey really amped up. So that's an opportunity for people to get more involved and kind of go through scenario planning through a fake city budget a little bit to get a little bit more in the weeds in terms of all of these financial details. We're going to be talking a lot more explicitly about how much each department gets funded and asking people to respond to unforeseen circumstances in terms of reallocating funds. So if anyone listening has been to any of the comp plan workshops that are going on right now.
Juno's Future?
Yes, Juno Future, I believe. Juno Futures.
Future Juno.
those are great. If you haven't signed up, do that. But these budget workshops are structured really the same way. So it's presenting people with the budget as it stands, asking them to take some away from it, from wherever they see fit, and then respond to unforeseen circumstances. One of them, I think, is miraculously, there was no GLOF. There was no major flood this year, so we have more resources than we thought.
Imagine if that happened.
Would be nice. So it's things like that, and it's just another way of getting more information about how the public would reallocate those resources if given the opportunity.
I see. Yeah. And those will all be listed on the website.
Yes. All those
/community-compass. You can find the dates and times.
Yes.
For the
all the dates, times and locations are on there and the RSVPs are open. There are only 25 spots per workshop, though. So definitely sign up sooner rather than later.
Christine, do you get to be, is this workshop like an opportunity you were saying about, like, you know, having folks take the survey or make those difficult choices, sort of getting in the mind of an assembly member? Because it's not easy what you all do and what you have to do. And then you have these unforeseen circumstances like floods or snowpocalypse, mm-hmm. you know, things like that. Is this workshop a great way to sort of get yourself in the mind of an assembly member and be like, this is the work that we have to do in finding a way to balance this budget?
Absolutely. And I'm biased, but I think it's really fun. So I would encourage people,
nerd,
especially.
I wholeheartedly agree.
No, it's
with
really,
Christy.
I mean, some people love the numbers. You know, some people do love the numbers and crunching them and figuring it out. And I think in a group of like 25, like you're going to have in these workshops, it could be fun to have that discussion and be like, well, why would you want to cut XYZ where I would want to cut this other thing? Or maybe there's some solutions that might magically be talked about in there that could then be transferred as information to the assembly, right? That's kind of the idea.
Yeah. Having been through a couple workshops, this kind of community engagement, I would say, is obviously about the public of Juneau being able to engage with their city, but it's also a great opportunity, like you said, to engage with other people in Juneau who might not share the same views as you or other people in your bubble, which it's really easy to get into that bubble in Juneau, despite how small it is here.
Right, for sure. Yeah. So I want to take a minute to look at some of these questions. And I have the page for those who might be on the stream so we can take a look at this. But the, you know, asks you where you live, things like that. It gets you, oh, I guess I have to answer that question. I'm going to say I'm downtown right now because that's where I am. And then what generation? I'm a Gen Xer. It asks for your information that way. And then your race. And it just gets some basic I work in public media, so I'm middle income. and I'm going to say neutral on my feelings because I work at a news organization. And then I'm going to say,
was not expecting you to take this live on air.
For that, I want to get to the question. I should have done this.
You can click whatever and just crank through it and go back.
I wanted
and
to get to this one. Yeah. So, okay, thinking about the services provided by the city and borough of Juneau, which programs or services are the most important to you? Please select your 4 to 5 top answers. And these are randomly generated in the survey, right? Like in each, it says, like it's not listed from top priorities.
No, the order of them is random.
Yeah, it's random. Yes, so it says here, like libraries, museum, arts and culture, tourism, management and visitor infrastructure. I'm not gonna read all of them. I just wanna give people the idea. Mm-hmm. Climate action and energy efficiency, the International Airport, Housing Development and Land Use Planning, Child Care, Early Childhood Program, et cetera. There's all the wastewater, stormwater, social services, recreation facilities. There's just a whole list of things. And by making me pick four or five, you really start to think about, like, well, what's important about what I would say is I want to make sure is funded, mm-hmm. right? Like, I love libraries, museum, arts, and culture. That's my thing, right? That's my whole life. But is that top four? I don't know, right? Like, it's an interesting dilemma.
It is an interesting dilemma. And a number of people have asked me this question or presented me with it, saying, like, this is too hard. I cannot make this decision. And my advice to you, if you're having a hard time making your selection on that question, is to not necessarily think of it as what is best for Juno. What we're looking for is what is most meaningful to you.
Okay. Yeah. So really make it more about me.
Yes.
As opposed to about what I think is best for the city.
Yeah, because if you view these things in the context of everything going on in Juno, it gets very complicated, very heavy, very, very quickly. So
you can leave the hard work to us.
Yes.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah. So I don't have to make the Sophie's choice, as it were, of budgeting. Now, I did notice on here, because we talked about the Enterprise Fund, which may not be part of this, that the airport and the regional hospital, mm-hmm. but those are included in here. Why did you include those in there if those aren't necessarily on the...
Excellent question, Boston. We did deliberate that on that for a bit internally before approving or moving forward with the survey as it stands. And I'll kind of cite what I said earlier is in this survey, we're looking for values, not necessarily specific budgeting information. So regardless of whether the airport or Eagle Crest is its own separate thing, if that's what you value most in Juno, that's what we want to know about so that the assembly has that information to inform future decisions when and where that's appropriate.
I see. Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you're looking for value, what you value in Juno.
Yes.
Not necessarily what you think Juno should value.
I will also put a little bit of an asterisk on something I said earlier when I mentioned that we're looking for this broad value information and not necessarily budget specifics. If you are equipped and have ideas regarding budget specifics and amounts of money to specific areas, please put that into. There are flexible fields in the survey where you can type whatever
you
want.
Yeah.
By all means, put that information in, because that is, if you have a great idea, we want to hear about it.
Or show up to the workshops.
Exactly.
Or to the listening sessions, the assembly listening sessions.
Send us an email.
Yeah.
Okay, so I want to move to this question for you, Christine, which is at the end of the FAQ section, you have this, it says, what budget guidance has the assembly given to the city manager for the FY27 so far? And this was interesting to me because the idea that the city manager, Katie Kester, who's the city manager, puts together the initial idea of a budget, right? So based on probably the last few years of budgeting and what issues might be coming up, that like the GLOF, things like that, that might happen. But there is guidance from the assembly beforehand. And so there were three areas that you all gave to Katie to think about. Do you want to talk a little bit about those?
Sure. So we're, looking ahead, we're thinking we're going to be looking for $10 to $12 million of reduced revenue. I will say those are estimates.
Right.
We don't know exactly what's going to happen when a lot of these things get exempted, and it'll take us some time to figure that out. But, there's lots of different ways to address revenue reductions. You can figure out other ways to increase revenue.
Right.
You can cut across the board. Maybe we'd say we want to cut everything at 7%. Or you can cut services. You can say, well, we're actually not going to do this thing anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
And so a lot of different factors. And so basically the direction, how we go through the budget process, we tell the manager, bring us back a budget with these basic frameworks. She goes, she works with the departments. They look at what they think things are going to cost. They come back. And so the direction that we gave her was, to deal with this revenue hole, we wanted you to do a few things. We want you to look closely at the assumptions that you use going into the budget. So the Assembly has been pretty conservative over the years. We've been, you know, we always make estimates. How much is housing going to cost? How much is our infrastructure going to cost? But we've been like, we don't want to be wrong. Mm. We want to make sure we get a little savings so that if a flood happens or if something happens at the hospital, we can help. And so we basically said, let's be less conservative, a little less savings oriented. We can cut some money from the budget there. We said we want to look at a few other revenue options, increasing revenue. So that would be increasing fees. So maybe you go to the pool now and you pay more than you did in the past. Mm. Or we have exemptions. Some people don't pay sales tax on particular items. Can we get rid of those exemptions? So those are other ways to bring in a bit more money to offset that.
Yeah.
And then we said, you know, but what we've heard from the voters in this election was, you know, there are things that the city does that folks don't want to pay for. And so we said, we've got to reduce actually what we do.
Service reductions.
Service reductions. Yeah. And so we basically took those three tactics and said, come back to us with your budget. I will say that, you know, on the service reduction part, we said, city manager, we don't want your ideas on how to reduce services. That's our job. That's our hard job mm-hmm. to do after we've gotten this feedback from the public. So, but we've got kind of a guess about the size of that.
Of what that would be.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that it looks to be 2 to 4 million potentially for service reductions that mm-hmm. you are asking to see in an initial budget. Obviously, things will change as time goes by. It's interesting when I took the survey earlier today. The thought that came to mind was in my brain, I hadn't thought about this. I was like, but what if these services could be privatized, right? Like, what does the city actually need to manage versus what they don't need to manage? And that's where I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting, you know, to ponder and to question. And mm-hmm. I guess that's the point of the survey, is to sort of figure that out and see where we might be going from there.
There's definitely a case that, you know, a chance that there are things that the city decides we're not going to do anymore as a city, but the community finds another way. He says, we really want to do this thing.
Yeah.
We're going to use volunteers to do it,
right,
or we're going
to
do private fundraising, or we're going to find a business that wants to do that. So, you know, there's benefits to having us collectively as a community contribute to doing that. But if we don't have enough money to do it, then, you know, maybe there are other options out there if the community wants to see those services continue.
Absolutely. Well, I thank you so much for the conversation today. We'll continue these chats. Yes, Phil?
I just want to plug the URLs one more time.
I was going to do that. I'm going to say that as we go.
I'm going to do it.
But go ahead.
To take the survey, please visit bit.ly/CBJ budget. And to get the survey button, the workshop dates, all the FAQ information, visit juno.org/community-compass. I will say also really quick, we are already at about 1,000 survey responses,
awesome.
Which is great. So everyone's doing it. Hop on that bandwagon and take the survey.
If everybody's doing it, then you should do it too.
You should definitely. Yeah. Don't let everybody else fill it out without you filling
it out. I
love
that. Christine Wall, Phil Hibshin, thank you so much for coming in. It's the CBJ budgeting process. It's not going to be easy. It's going to be lengthy, and we'll be talking about it over the next couple months. I really appreciate you coming in today. Go take the survey, bit.ly/CBJ budget. Or as Phil said, go visit juno.org/community-compass. Appreciate you being here. Gunath Cheesh.
Gunath Cheesh. Thank you.
That will do it for today's Juno Afternoon. We are Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTOO Juno 104.3 and KAUK 91.7 Juno Auk Bay. Find the show online at ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon, where you can listen to episodes, subscribe to the podcast, offer feedback or suggestions, or find out how to be a guest on the show. You can also find live stream archives on KTOO's YouTube page. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Programming support for Juno Afternoon comes from listeners and viewers like you and Alaska Airlines Club 49, Hanson Gress, and Heritage Coffee Roasting Company. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Gunath Cheesh.